With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Good morning, afternoon, and evening, everyone. Welcome to the Game Week 5 pod of the FPL Wire, powered by Dreamset Go. I'm your host, Zofa, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend, Big Man Bucket. How's it going, buddy?
Thanks for having me, Zof. It's going well. I had a decent game week, 71 points. Took a four-point hit. Despite that, I got a 100k green arrow, so I'm very happy with how things went. Ronaldo was my captain, and I had Trent, which brought home the significant majority of my points. So overall, it was a good game week, and fortunately enough, I didn't own Calvert-Lewin. I was spared the misery, but I feel for their owners, and we have one right here in Late Riser who bought him in for a hit. So why don't you talk us through the experience, Late Riser?
So my temperament has been pinging from tilt to calm in the past 24 to 48 hours. And I've been very confused in terms of what to do, been all over the place, been bothering both of y'all and been bothering a few people, a few of my friends from FPL Twitter, Baker and FPL Rouser and Dan, FPL Bullet. But I have absorbed a lot more information today, took the time out, calmly just absorbed a lot more information and feeling a lot better, calmed down and looking forward to just chatting with you boys. FPL, as we know it, came back last week, and where you can take like one sort of bad beat in 1 week, where I owned Ryan Webster. And he was hauled off in the 36th minute, and Brighton kept that clean sheet. And then you hear the DCL news when you've been looking forward to, watching Monday Night Football all weekend, and then that happens. So and plus, I missed a lot of the action on the weekend. It was my birthday, so what happened on Saturday, Sunday is quite a blur. I don't remember much of it. So I've been looking forward to the Monday Night Football game that happened, and then DCL was injured, and suddenly I'm sitting with DCL, Antonio, no bench. I'm sitting with Webster, and I'm wondering what the hell to do, and I've been thinking about wildcarding or not wildcarding, and at the moment I'm in a calm zen state of mind, but I won't be surprised if I'm easily shifted. Got 68 minus 4, sort of like a gray arrow. I went down 1k, ranks don't matter at the moment. I went down from 322 to 323k. Zof, how was your week?
Decent, 74 minus 4. The majority of the points brought home by Manchester United. 26 points for Ronaldo, 5 points each for Greenwood and Shaw. Apart from that, Trent and Salah.
You want me to send you a kit?
You can keep it.
Right, so let's get into the sponsor. Yeah.
Cool. Dreamset Go is a global portal for fans to gain access to sporting events around the world. Accommodation, flight tickets, hospitality, stadium visits, everything can be tailored exactly to your requirements. They also do celebrity experiences, which include masterclasses with your favorite sports celebrity or something as simple as birthday shoutouts. You can find links to the products in the description below. They're also tying up with some top-notch Premier League clubs, which we will reveal to you very soon. We can't just yet, but safe to say I'm very excited about it. Pranil?
Yes, we're also partners with Fantasy Football Scout. All the stats that you see on the podcast are from from the FFS members area. If you haven't signed up, do sign up with them. Click on the link in the description below. And if you're signing up, use our links because it helps us because we're affiliated with Fantasy Football Scout. Also, shout out, we've had a few Patreon signups in the last couple of weeks. So a shout out to Sachin Rajput, Phil Donnell, Abhishek Ganti, Scott White, and Tavsif Alvi for supporting us on Patreon. We don't do any exclusive different paid content at the moment. All of our content is free. So this is just to support us. If you want to pay us £3 or £6 a month. That's about it. And we've also started a league. So if you want to join our league, the description is on the screen. And I can't quite see it there. It's GKTIYM. So join our league and we'll be announcing very exciting prizes shortly. So what do we have first off?
Right. So I thought instead of having a like a structured agenda, there's so much to talk about. We can talk fixture by fixture. And then as the topic comes into it, Antonio, etc., Jota, Bamford, we can start. But let's start off first with Palace Spurs, the Conor Gallagher show. What did you guys think about this, Bakker?
Absolutely. I was thoroughly impressed by his performance, actually. I watched the game live and Spurs were all over the place. What caught me by surprise was the fact that I expected Spurs to sort of struggle in the game, but for them to struggle to such a huge extent was actually sort of eye-opening for me. I didn't expect that to happen. I'll give you a stat here. So Palace managed to accumulate almost 9 times as many shots as Spurs in the game. Spurs had just the 2, which was lowest of all teams in the game week. Palace had 18. And Palace were all over them thoroughly. They thoroughly deserved the victory. As far as Gallagher is concerned, I was watching him with a lot of interest. He was taking set pieces. He was getting into good, promising positions. And when I looked at the numbers after the game, it was of no surprise to me that he was top among all players for shots in the 6-yard box in this week, game week, and second for big chance involvements. I think at 5.6, he could be a good option to own. Particularly, Palace have a bit of a fixture swing in game week 9. After that, I think he could be a good option to own. I don't mind owning him. Actually, you know, Azov, This idea was sort of presented to me by a friend of mine. He's on wildcard this week, and he presented me this idea of rotating Marçal with Gallagher till game week 9. I actually like it because it helps you to keep the structure, and it also allows you to take advantage of Marçal's fixtures till 9.
Tell me, Bakker, yeah. I just want to ask you. Gallagher is a 5.5, 5.6 million option, and we've got a trio of Everton midfielders in that price bracket who are better fixtures at the moment. So do you go with the fixtures or do you go with the underlings?
I mean, as far as Decore and Gray is concerned, I mean, Gray in particular is the one I'd look at, but I think I'd still prefer someone like a Gallagher over him because his stats seem more sustainable. I don't think the way Gray is playing is sustainable in the long run. I mean, he could do well, especially in game week 6 against Norwich. But other than that, I don't think he's going to do much.
What if you're dead-ending your team in a couple of game weeks? Because Palace have Liverpool, Brighton and Leicester next. What if you're dead-ending?
I'd go with Gray because of the Norwich fixture.
What about you, Zov? In case people want to, you know, go down to a 5.5 million midfielder right now to fund a big hitter in the forward bracket, which way would you lean?
Definitely either Andros or Gray, the short-term fixtures. But Gallagher, I think is going to be a great, if you want to get him in now for the long run, he's a great because the potential he's showed, I think, in difficult fixtures. He's on all their set pieces. He looks to be one of their primary goal threats. You could argue his goal involvement is going to be higher than the Everton mids.
Correct. And I just wanted to, you know, I thought this is the last time Nuno is going to be playing three in the midfield. That system just did not work. I mean, it just didn't work. And what I do want to mention, though, is that Spurs do have better players coming into the team. So defensively, I wouldn't be too worried. And a lot of people are talking about, you know, Chelsea are going to steamroll them, but they played, their center backs were not even in the first three or four choices. And I think Lo Celso, Romero, Sanchez are going to be coming in. Lo Celso is somebody they're missing because they don't have creativity in the midfield at the moment. Something is up with Ndombele as well. And with Skip and Hoberg and Winks, there's just nobody who's providing the creativity in the midfield. So I think once that happens, it'll change. But I'm not interested in the Spurs attack at all at the moment. Defensively, I think they should improve once Romero and Sanchez are coming. What are you expecting with that Chelsea game at the weekend so far?
Let's talk about it when we get to that section, but I think we should be having a comprehensive victory, 2-0, something around those lines.
All right. But anybody interested in any Spurs assets at the moment?
Nope.
All right. I just want to reinforce those Gallagher stats. Since game week 2, amongst all players, he's top for XGI. And since his debut, amongst FPL midfielders, he's second for shots. He's third for shots in the box. He's second for shots on target and he's first for big chances. So those underlying numbers are actually just really, really convincing. I think if one of the Everton boys come through or ESR comes through as a sustainable 5.5 million asset, I have no doubt Gallagher is going to be a sustainable 5.5 million asset as well. It might enable three big hitters. So if you flirted around with that sort of a structure for the Fan Zone show earlier, do you think you like the look of that?
If you had asked me maybe a couple of weeks earlier, I would have still said 3 PMs is not possible. But there's an argument to go for that. And if you want to go for that, I think these midfielders like your Greys, your Sars, your Traores, they are possibly going to come into the picture. You can throw three of them in there and you could still have a defense of, let's say, Marcel, Christensen, Trent. Because you want to keep these three guys with Trent. Trent is a non-negotiable for me, even more so than Salah, I think. At 7.5, he delivers you the output of a 10 or 11 million player.
So, Bakar, where are you at on 2 premiums versus 3?
I'm still in the 2 premiums camp. I know that Lukaku scored twice this week, which sort of makes this harder to argue for this week than it was at this point last week. But I still don't think that that it is the efficient use of funds to invest in three players when you'll likely be rotating between just the two for captaincy. So I still prefer going in with the two mids, premium assets, because I don't like the over reliance and the over dependence on the heavy hitters.
Yeah, this is something I read on Twitter. Actually, want to give out a shout out to FPL Bagan Boy, where he said that the goalposts are going to shift very, very quickly this season. You know, today, 2 premiums look like the right way to go. Tomorrow, we have all three banging in a brace again. And it looks like 3 premiums is the way to go. I think something we need to do this season is keep a very open mind. And if us as content creators, anybody is sticking their neck out on Twitter and saying that this is the way to go, and if your mind changes next week, don't have ego attached to it. Because I think especially this season, because of the flurry of options, I think that could be the downfall of you in FPL. Let's move on to the next.
Yeah, go on, I want to put on from a strategy standpoint, what is going to come down to, I think Ronaldo is going to have close to 50% ownership by about when United have the fixture swing. And this reminds me very much of the situation last year when Son and Kane were on fire. Their combination was around 40% owned. So you have to make a decision. Do you play safe by sticking to those guys and ensure you don't lose rank? Or do you go or take the risk, go bet against those guys in the tough fixtures, put the money elsewhere?
Yeah, the decision is going to come around game week 7, right? You and me were having actually a pretty long conversation in terms of 7 or 8 in terms of when to wildcard as well. So yeah, because we played really well against Everton in preseason. Yes, it was preseason, but you know, if they're going to be without DCL as well in game week 7, how many people are going to make that shift from Ronaldo to Lukaku, who's going to be playing Southampton at home? I don't know. If United keep sustaining this, then who knows?
You'll get more to United the next one. Let's talk about Arsenal Norwich. Arsenal had so many shots away, they finally put one away, and I think it's a beginning of a good run for them. When Partey came on, they were much better. He played a part in the goal as well. And I think with their fixtures coming, it's not a bad idea to get into the Gunners right now.
What happened when Partey came on? What was the shape in the front six? I'm very curious to know.
It's a similar shape, the chain, but he was the one who really carries the ball from back to front. Even he was the one who made that diagonal pass. Also, the midfield, I think it was Pepe to take the shot.
Yeah, the reason I ask this question is because I'm a little worried about the nailed-onness of anybody behind Auba at the moment. Whether, because did Odegaard play in midfield along with Partey, and then what happens to ESR, Pepe and Saka? Who are they not nailed? Yeah. Odegaard started playing as a 10 in that game. So I'm worried what happens when ESR is also integrated into the team. Because I think everybody's a rotation risk then.
Completely agree. Because I think that game, he had Auba on the left, Laka central. He could easily toss people around. He could even play ESR on the left wing. You don't know yet. And I think it's a bit of a wait and watch in terms of the attack. Give them another few weeks. Because I don't think the next three fixtures are that easy. It's Burnley, Brighton and Spurs.
Correct.
Bakar, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, fantasy interest in this game was more or less limited to just the Arsenal defense. And, you know, they were decent this game week, conceding just the 5 shots inside the box. I won't read too much into it because it's Norwich. But the thing to note here is the fact that Ramsdale played and he kept a clean sheet. And Arteta was very, very sort of appreciative of his performance. And he sort of hinted, there was an article in The Athletic as well, he sort of hinted that he's going to keep his place if he keeps on performing well. Which is of relevance to all three of us, actually, because, you know, we're considering wildcard in and around that game week 7 to 8 mark. So in case we're wildcarding, Arsenal have a beautiful run of fixtures after game week 8. So in case Ramsdale looks like playing, I think he could be a very good option at 4.5.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of the things which I was looking at when I was thinking about, you know, panically pushing the wildcard button this game week, because like Utkarsh mentioned, you know, Arsenal have Burnley, Spurs and Brighton next. I actually want to gain information from these next three game weeks, and I want to get into an Arsenal attacker. And I have a sneaky suspicion that Pepe could be the one. He had 6 shots and 6 chances created, and he's got that, I don't know how to say, he looks like the best FPL pick in terms of how selfish he is, etc. as well. So yeah, I want to see what happens there. One thing I do want to point out was that White created 3 chances from deep. So that
is
something.
Did you see the XA on those? It was a combined XA of 0.03.
Oh, so really, really, it's something he did for Brighton as well. There were balls from the deep where he tried to play Nobar, something of that sort.
If I'm not mistaken, I think he would have had a share of the bonus as well had he not gotten the yellow card.
Yeah, he's traditionally good for bonus because he does so many passes and stuff like that. I love that Magnus Carlsen got an Aubameyang on his wild card last week.
Yeah. Also, something that could be very interesting game week 7 or 8 onwards, because Auba was showing signs of getting back to his best. And except for last season, he's been a 20-goal-a-season goal scorer throughout. And, you know, if things start to click with Arsenal, their run game week 8 onwards is great. And I do like the strategy sort of structure that Magnus did, where he had 2 big hitters and the third one is a 10 million asset in that Son price range. It's something that could work, especially because Arsenal have such a sustained run of good fixtures. So I want to see what happens.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Move on?
Yeah. Just a couple of Norwich. Things, I think, actually. Norwich, and I'm going to talk about their wingbacks. Because what I noticed was the Japanese guy, he was actually sitting deep. And a lot of the times, Arsenal defended as a 3. And Tierney was bombing forward a lot. So, you know, maybe a couple of weeks later or 3 weeks later, on wildcard, the decision could be between Semedo and Tierney, because Tierney is bombing forward a lot as well. And he's still 4.9 million. So I just think that's worth bringing out, where it's sort of lopsided, like how Pochettino Mourinho used to do at Spurs as well. So just something worth noting.
Yeah, Mourinho with Audier.
Yeah. Norwich have a good run of fixtures. They have Watford, Everton, Burnley, Brighton. Good run of fixtures right until game week 14. What I'm worried about, any idea why there was so much rotation? They played a completely different team. No Rashika, no Cantwell, no starting CBs. What happened there?
I think 2 things. Number one, internationals. You had a lot of players who played 3 games for, like, let's say Scotland. You had Gilmore, who played a lot, A. And B, I sort of thought that he didn't really think of this as a very winnable fixture. Maybe for some reason he preferred not to risk these guys in this game.
Mabidele, I think, played because he was class for Ireland, apparently, in the international. So I think he was rewarded for those performances. And from what I read, he did well, and he's expected to start again this week.
Nice. What are you guys' thoughts on Pukki as a budget asset? The fixtures are there. Thoughts, Bakar?
I won't go there. Norwich, they just don't seem to carry too much threat. I mean, I can't say with any sort of confidence that, you know, they'll score in any game at the moment. So I won't go there personally. Yeah. I still think if you're looking for someone in that price range, exactly, Adam Armstrong or even Tony is better in my opinion.
I don't know if I'm agreeing with you boys here, because I saw that Leicester game and they matched Leicester pretty much in that game. They're playing some really good football. And once Gilmore comes back and Rashika and Cantwell, I like those players. And Pukki's 5.9 million now, and you're looking at those fixtures right until game week 14. I'm just going to read out the Norwich fixtures for you guys. There's Watford, Everton, Burnley, Brighton, Chelsea, Leeds, Brentford, Southampton, Wolves, and Newcastle. That's just a great run of fixtures. I think at 5.9 million, he could be a good set. And forget, the only worry that I have is they have this player called Adam Aida, who's been coming on and looking fairly all right every time on the 70th minute. And Pukki's getting 70 minutes and not 90. But you do have to take note that Norwich was a team that started the season with half their squad having COVID. So all of them have slow recovery processes, etc. But they have shown some promise in the way they've been playing, in my opinion. I wouldn't write them off.
I mean, you can argue that they have good fixtures, but in my personal opinion, I think they are the good fixture. They are the ones to target themselves.
And also, the fixtures aren't that good, right? Look, I would argue the Watford fixture is probably great. Then you have Everton away, tough. Burnley away, tough. Brighton, not easy as well.
I'm not at all talking about from a defensive point of view. I'm talking about
even from attack. I don't think the fixtures are great. They're all right, but they're not all great fixtures. By themselves is what the point
I just think whatever I've seen of Cantwell, Rashika, and Gilmore, I think is a fabulous player. I think they've got a team in there that will score a few goals. And Pukki's involvement rate when it comes to goal involvement is generally very high as well. So that's something where I wouldn't be against a Pukki punt at the moment. I like what I've seen from Norwich.
Fair enough. Should we move on?
Yep.
We're talking about Tony. Let's just segue into that over here. I didn't watch much of this game. I thought Mbeumo, from what I saw, had the better chances again than Tony. He had around, I think, 4 shots in the box. He fluffed them all. But what do you think, Tony owners, stick or sell? Bakar?
I mean, if there are no pressing concerns, then I would consider selling. But I mean, it's not something which is a priority transfer, in my opinion. His numbers over the past couple of weeks have been decent. And even this week alone, he should have had an assist. That Mbeumo chance you're talking about, it was going to be a Tony assist. I think he's worth keeping.
I'm just reading out the fixtures over here. It's Wolves away, Liverpool, West Ham, Chelsea, Leicester. Tough fixtures.
Who do you sell him for is the question, right? I mean, that's the problem. I mean, I'm assuming that you can't actually go to someone in a similar sort of upgrade. So you have to pick someone in a similar price range. I mean, like I won't sell him for someone like a Pukki. No, I don't advocate that. I would rather have Brentford with tough fixtures rather than Norwich with good fixtures.
I don't agree.
Yeah, Bakar, I'm almost ready to wager here that Pukki outdoes Tony in the next 10 game weeks.
Shall we do a Johnny Evans bet?
Johnny Evans. No bets which involve any sort of moves into our own FPL transfers.
I've been impressed with Brentford. I mean, I don't see a reason that they just get battered by the tougher teams. I mean, I won't be surprised if he scored in some of those fixtures, West Ham, Liverpool. I mean, he's on penalties as well. I don't think that he becomes a bad option overnight.
Yeah. The defensive stats are actually really, really good. Given the fixtures they've had as well. I think only one or two teams have conceded more big chances, if I remember correctly as well.
Absolutely.
So Brentford's defensive numbers are good. And if I saw the highlights against Brighton. I haven't seen the game. I saw match of the day. They had the better of Brighton for most of the game, in my opinion.
For sure.
And what I could make out from the game, watching the game, is Ivan Toney is a Premier League player. He's quality. Like his awareness, his chance creation, everything. And they got a little bit of Crouch and Defoe happening there from old school Pompey days with Mbeumo and Ivan Toney. And I quite like that partnership. But I think, Zoff, you were spot on. It's a don't buy, don't sell, maybe hold on for that Wolves fixture. I don't mind the shift to Pukki personally. I'm worried a little bit about Adam Armstrong after Broja came on in the last 20 minutes and put on a good show. So that's something I've gone off a little off Armstrong at the moment. So Pookie is the one, only one in this price bracket for me at the moment, if you are to switch from Ivan Tooney.
Fair enough.
Anything one last point. Brighton had just the 4 shots in this game. So just tells me that, you know, if you'd invested in someone like a David Raya, you were actually very unlucky not to come out of that game with a clean sheet. XG of just 0.2 for Brighton.
Yeah, this is all
the,
just
the most anti Brighton, the most anti Brighton thing you can hear.
They are reverting to the mean from last season. This is not the first game that where they've not been doing well when it comes to the expected stats. So this is just XG karma beginning to come full circle. Yeah.
Go on. I just want to say now, I think Duffy, we previously thought he was short term, but like you mentioned, due to the injury to Webster, I think Duffy is pretty nailed now.
Correct. And we don't know the grade of Webster's strain at the moment. So I think we just need to wait until Potter's press conference to see what happens there. But what was interesting to see is that once Webster did go off, they didn't shift back to 3 at the back. They played with 4 at the back. So there was a change of shape there. And Duffy and Dunk are used to playing with each other previously as well. So a slightly more longer term pick than before, but my issue with Brighton is I think the strongest clean sheet fixtures are now gone. It's a little more as Bakar would like to say, iffy at the moment. I'm not sure when it comes to the I'm not sure of the fixtures right now. That's all.
Can we get some likes for Bakar's new internet, please?
Yes, guys, we've got 700 of y'all watching and just 126 likes. Make sure you're hitting like because it just helps us to get discovered and it helps our optics. That's all.
All right, what do we have? New internet. I'm so happy I don't have to see Bakker disappear into the matrix anymore.
To be fair, I mean, Bakker had planned that because there was a big Matrix trailer that came out this weekend. So it was just a prelude to that big announcement. We were pretty much, we tied up with the Matrix and this was a sponsored thing that we did last weekend.
There's one more thing on Brighton. Do you think if anyone is on wildcard now, stick with Sanchez?
You know, I think we had this discussion last week. I mean, I still think it's worth sticking with Sanchez simply because of the fact that, you know, when you're picking a keeper, it's supposed to be for the long term. You don't want to be wasting your transfer on a keeper. And, you know, the thing with Brighton is they're still conceding a decent amount of shots. It's just that most of them have been on target. I know that Sanchez has not been making saves. It's just the fact that they are conceding a lot of shots from outside the box. They're still averaging around 11 shots per game conceded. And I think with the fixtures coming up, which are a bit dodgy, he might make more saves. And there is a chance, given how rigid the Brighton defense can be, that he might actually accumulate a haul given the sort of difficulty of the fixtures. I won't get rid, and I think he's a good option for the long run because you want a set and forget keeper when you're on a wild card.
What about you, Zoff? What would you do?
Probably stick, I think, with Sanchez because Rea's fixtures ultimately look really tough, and I've totally gone off Watford. I think we need to forget whatever we saw from the Championship last season. I don't think they look like a very good defensive outfit. So if you would go up next to money, I like Jose Sarr's fixtures. If you're going to spend 5 million, the Wolves defense definitely looks like one you need a piece of for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I'd either move up to Sarr or I'd roll the dice on Ramsdale. I think I'd do that given the fixtures.
Ramsdale's an interesting one because, like you said, I think you were keen on him, but I just don't know under Arteta. He just suddenly shoved Leno in for one game, the odd game. If Ramsdale has a howler.
I think after a couple of games, the situation might get more clearer.
Yeah, I just take the gamble right now if on wildcard, that's all. If it doesn't work, your team is a few transfers ahead of everybody else's anyway because you're wildcarding today, I'd take that gamble. Because the thing about Ramsdale is that he's good with his feet as well, and that's something Arteta wants in his team. And that's something that might continue. So, yeah. And just a shout out to FPL General. I think his favorite keeper is going to become everyone's keeper pretty soon, maybe around Game Week 7, Game Week 8.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Move on, Leicester.
Yeah, Leicester versus Man City. I think both of you all have Ferran. Why don't you all talk about the game?
Bakker?
Yeah. Azov chose to copy me on my transfer this week.
That's why I did my transfer whole 12 hours earlier, right?
Which is often the case. But yeah, I mean, City, in my opinion, really should have had more goals. I haven't been impressed with Leicester much this season, and I think City had the better of them as expected. I think the scoreline should have been higher. City had an XG of 2.8, which is one of the best this week. 25 shots, including 21 from inside the box, which just tells you how much they dominated. You know, but almost 90% of their shots were inside the box. And I was impressed with Torres. I mean, he had 4 shots inside the box and his movement was great. He had 9 penalty area touches. As long as he's starting, I don't even mind him playing just the 60-odd minutes because he's likely to do better than a lot of other players in that price range. And I think he's likely to represent value.
He'll get the volume.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the other thing which I noticed this week is that Grealish's numbers were actually pretty decent. He was top for chances created in this game. And now that this takes him to actually second highest for chances created over the season. And he was playing in a very sort of advanced role as well. Even though he's wide, he's still advanced. And this is the thing with Grealish. Even though when you look at him from the eye test, he's not really appealing, but you look at his numbers and almost in every game he's getting a big chance involvement here or there. You know, so I think he's worth keeping an eye on. I mean, I'm not sure what's going to happen with De Bruyne and Foden back, but just worth pointing out.
I just want to actually point out something very important that I want to give a shout out to Luke Disable, who pointed something out on Twitter, where this is something that even Neil wrote in the FFS article, where Pep is very much talking about having one player on his dominant foot, having that player on either side. And that player on the left-hand side is Bernardo Silva, because he's the left-sided CM, and he wants to have that option of having a first-time cross-in because Cancelo is actually right-footed and he's playing as an inverted fullback. So that's something which might bode well for Ferran, because I looked into the stats as well, and City are top of the league for crosses so far this season. So that is something that you know, they are reverting back to, where they're just crossing a lot, and that bodes well for Ferran Torres, because Pep talking about having the right-footed player on the right side and having at least one left-footed player on the left side, and them having being top of the league for crosses so far in the season, I think it just bodes well. It bodes well for Grealish, it bodes well for Gabriel Jesus, because Jesus, you know, is right-footed and is playing on the right wing. But I don't know what happens when Kevin De Bruyne comes into the team, because we know he's right-footed and he'll probably be playing in that right midfield for Man City. So probably when De Bruyne comes, Pep might make the shift to Mahrez if he wants to, but he likes having a dominant foot on either side. So I think that was just an interesting observation. And I think it's also really, really good for Cancelo. If Bernardo is playing on that side, he's somebody we've overlooked and not spoken about on the pod too much in the first 4 game weeks. So interesting to see what happens when the Champions League starts, but we are going to be wildcarding in 2 or 3 weeks. They are top of the league with Chelsea for clean sheets so far, and their stats are also better than City, better than Chelsea. I don't know how Chelsea kept a clean sheet against Villa, but yeah, just something worth monitoring, I think.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to add, Bakar, you said that City dominated this game. I don't entirely agree. I think Leicester had a few good chances, and I think City were very lucky to get 3 points here.
Dominated in terms of chances, I meant, not in terms of...
Right, but in terms of like good scoring opportunities, I thought Leicester had a few as well.
Yeah, Barnes hit the post. There was that Vardy cross to Barnes as well. There was a Vardy offside goal as well, which doesn't count in the stats as well. So yeah, those are the chances that they have. City have only conceded one big chance in the last 3 game weeks. So I think when we are wildcarding in a few weeks, I think at least one City defender is going to be pretty nailed in our team. While before we just started podding, just a bit of news that came out was that Stones and Laporte, right? Both of them didn't train in the open training session. So just something worth monitoring for those that own or are considering buying at the moment.
Right. Should we move on? Anything to add here?
Nope. I'm good.
United, Newcastle, the floor is yours, Pinnell.
So, I think to start with, I was really worried in the first 40 minutes because if you remember on the last pod, I mentioned that I don't know functionally how our system is going to work. The only reason I'm buying Ronaldo is because of the talent that we are going to be putting on the pitch, and that's exactly what happened. We weren't functional in the first 40-45 minutes. We didn't create that much. We didn't look like a team that's been playing with each other for a long time. But then you buy a guy having scored a million goals, because he's the one who knows to even make that run when Greenwood is taking a shot from far. And that's what you get owning a Cristiano Ronaldo, because that experience comes into play when you're doing something like that. So the talking point is, yeah, Ronaldo, I have him down to score 20, 25 goals this season. So he's going to be coming into play. Us as a team will take some time to click. Us as a team will take some time to improve. Shaw's looking good. I don't know how many clean sheets he's going to keep, but as a creative asset, he's looking good. The one I'm worried about is Mason Greenwood, because he was spending a lot more time on the wings, more than usual. And I think his output is going to go down a fair bit. I'm hoping the next two games suit United more, because I don't think West Ham are going to sit as deep. They will play a little bit. I think that will be the case with Villa as well. So I'm hoping there are some counter opportunities for Mason or something of that sort.
West Ham aren't going to sit deep. But they don't have Antonio, it's David Moyes. Sorry, West Ham aren't going to come at you. West Ham are going to sit super deep.
Yep. I won't be surprised if they revert to three at the back in the next game as well because of no Antonio. So he might do something to change shape. And I didn't think Bruno looked too bad. Very honestly, his stats were poor in comparison to Ronaldo.
He was making that
Ronaldo
late run a few times. I saw him get into the box a few times. And sorry to interrupt you, the lineup has just come in for the UCL fixture. Greenwood is benched. Van de Beek starts. Varane is benched. Ronaldo starts.
Nice. Really?
Nice. Like that.
Is Shaw starting,
yeah. But I think because Telles is injured, he's not even on the bench.
Who's playing in place of Greenwood in that front three?
So I think he's playing Pogba on the left, and he's playing this one on midfield, right?
And Sancho is playing. Yeah, Sancho. Okay, got it. I won't be surprised to see Jesse Lingard start at the weekend then. Because Sancho hasn't looked very effective. He'll take some time to get used to the league. And I thought Lingard looked sharp when he came home. So I think Lingard is going to play a pretty decent squad role for us this season. But Bruno, I think you make the shift to Ronaldo when you can afford it. But I wouldn't be taking a hit or pulling plugs to get Ronaldo and sell Bruno now. Because I think if you are going to make that move, you make that move in game week 4 when you have that prime Newcastle home fixture. I don't think West Ham and Villa are going to be as easy fixtures. And I don't know how good we are functionally still. So you guys, what do you guys think?
It depends on when you're going to wildcard. I think if you're not going to wildcard soon, then you need to create that structure for the third forward, even if you're going to get in Lukaku. So might as well do it now.
Agreed.
Bakar?
Go
ahead.
Just one thing, Bakar, before you start. Just one thing. I would want to mention that Ronaldo did have a tendency to shift on the left a lot, which is something United strikers have done in the past when we're talking about Greenwood and Martial. So that could open up space for Bruno centrally. That's just something I noticed as well, because Ronaldo did come deep a fair bit. He did link up play better than I expected him to. And he shifted to the left, drifted to the left a fair bit.
That's true.
Yeah. Bakar. Go on, Bakar. Yeah,
So I agree that I don't think it's worth taking a hit to sell him this week, because Ronaldo is not the obvious captaincy shout for Bruno to Fernandes, but to Ronaldo. But I think it might be worth it in game week 6, personally, because it would give you that structure to get Lukaku in 7 if you don't have the wild card. In my opinion, I think it's worth the transfer in 6. Bruno had 5 shots, all from outside the box. And even though he created a big chance, which is likely to be the case, I mean, I think he's going to keep on creating chances. And I don't think, if anything, this is only going to improve his creative potential. But as compared to Ronaldo had a XGI of 1.2. Bruno had it of 0.7. So I think Ronaldo is clearly the superior pick to have. At the moment, Mason Greenwood had just the one shot inside the box. And two shots, both were from distance. He was very fortuitous to get that assist from the deflection, in my opinion. You spoke about Shaw and the fact that United, you're not too sure about United's clean sheets. I disagree on that point. When I look at United's next 3 fixtures, they're facing West Ham without Antonio. So West Ham without Antonio, last season, their XG was 1.1 without Antonio. With Antonio, it's 1.8. That's a significant difference. I think they'll probably struggle this week, which is also worth noting for Benrahma owners, you know, because it also limits his potential. I think they simply play better with Antonio on the side. Then they have Villa, who haven't been playing well at all this season. They're still bottom for XG from Open Play this year. And in the third fixture, Shaw has Everton, who will all in all likelihood be without Calvert-Lewin. Now, without Calvert-Lewin, Everton last season averaged 0.9 big chances per game as compared to 2.1 big chances per game. Average XG dropped from 1.3 to 0.8 as well. So I think Shaw is a good shout for clean sheets in the next three fixtures.
Agree.
Interesting. Interesting. Bakar, just wanted to ask you, actually, this is something I remember from last season. Did Bruno have a tendency to do better away or something like that? No, I'm genuinely asking because I want to ask.
I think, honestly, as far as I can recall, I think that was the case in the first half of the season. But I don't think necessarily that was the case in the second half of the season.
All right. Cool.
I mean, United were better in the away. I think you guys are still undefeated, right? On the road?
Yeah, still undefeated. And we always tend to go a goal down early in those away games as well. It happened with West Ham as well last season.
Correct. So, yep. I think, move on. Anything else to add here?
Yeah, Newcastle are averaging 2.5 XGC per game at the moment. I think that's just insane defensively. And the good thing about Newcastle, they actually go on a little bit of a run. If Callum Wilson was fit right now, he'd be in play because the next two fixtures are Leeds and Watford. From an attacking point of view, you do like that. So I wish Wilson was there, but they do counter well. I thought Almiron had a really, really good game. He pressed well and did well when it on the counter as well. And if he can support St. Max well, I think they might do something on the counter because Leeds are conceding chances for fun at the moment. So I don't know if Luke Ayling is going to keep a clean sheet, but that's just something we talk about later. Just wanted to add that Newcastle are terrible in defense, but they can play in attack, I reckon.
They can counter attack again, but I think most teams are going to attack Newcastle. I don't think Newcastle are going to play teams that sit deep. So the point is a bit of moot. It's a bit moot. Southampton, West Ham. Bit of a dull game, not much to talk about. I think any stats here, Bakar, you'd like to add? I think we were mentioning something about Benrahma earlier.
Yeah, Benrahma, just the two chances created and no shots in the box in the game. No penalty area touch as well, which was a bit worrying for no owners like myself. And Southampton had the better of them generally. Southampton had 10 shots inside the box. West Ham had just the 5. And this was a pretty dull affair. There were no big chances at all for either side, but Southampton had the better of it. And, you know, this sort of gives me more of an idea that Livramento could actually be playable in some of the easier fixtures where Southampton are sort of expected to dominate. I think he's actually a playable option in some of the fixtures after game week 7 and 8 when their fixture swing comes.
Hasenhüttl actually spoke about them having a different style of defending this time around. So that's something that just came across. But I just do want to mention that the Southampton game, actually West Ham kept a lot more possession and Southampton sat deep and let West Ham play, which is something they don't like doing, which is why they struggle against the likes of Newcastle also always. So I do want to mention that, you know, and this is what Palace also did in the second half against West Ham, where they just sat deep and let West Ham have the ball, and West Ham don't know what to do when they have the ball and they like to play on the counter. So I just want to say that the next two games actually suit West Ham in terms of how they like to play. They scored in both the games against us last season as well. So something worth monitoring. And then they play Leeds United as well, and they had the better of Leeds United as well on both occasions last season, if I remember correctly. So I do want to mention that both these games suit how West Ham like to play. And obviously Europa is starting this weekend, right, Utkarsh?
Yes, day after.
Yes, so I think we might start seeing the effects of that and some tired, jaded legs as well over the weekend when it comes to West Ham.
Speaking of tired, jaded legs, let's talk about the big question of the week. Antonio, before we get into statistics for replacements, what do you guys think in terms of holding or selling Antonio? Bakar, you first.
I'd actually like Pranil to go first here because I have this long ass explanation planned for the whole of this topic.
You go ahead and get my popcorn.
Okay, so in my opinion, there are two scenarios basically in which you could possibly find yourself. And there's a scenario where you own Calvert-Lewin and where you own Antonio. In this scenario, in my opinion, you sell Calvert-Lewin because he's the long-term injury, and you hold on to Antonio because he's not an immediate sell, right? And he's going to be back next week, so you can just afford to keep him on the bench this week. The priority is to sell Calvert-Lewin. The other situation is the situation where I found myself in, where I don't own Calvert-Lewin and I had Antonio. I have sold Antonio for Bamford. I will make a case for that right here. I say that because of a couple of reasons. The first reason is the fact that a lot of people are fielding the likes of White, Omabedele, Williams, Gilmore this week instead of Antonio, and I don't like any of them options. Bamford has Newcastle this week. Newcastle, as Pranil mentioned, have abysmal defensive stats. I'll be clear, they're 20th for XG conceded and big chance conceded this season, and I think Bamford has high potential to do well.
Bakar, as you can argue, they scored, Leeds United scored 7 goals against Newcastle over both games last season. This one, go on.
Thank you. You can argue that I keep hearing this, that Leeds haven't started firing yet this season, but I firmly believe that with their fixture swing coming up, they're going to do well. Bamford's numbers this year are actually on par with his numbers last year. There's not much of a difference. There's a slight drop, but I expect it them to get better. I mean, his XGI this year is 0.6 XGI per game as compared to 0.7 last season. Then there's the fact that Europa is going to become a factor. And the main thing why I did the move was because, honestly, I wasn't sure whether I was going to wildcard in Game Week 7 or 8. And a lot of managers have already used their wildcard. So this is of particular relevance to those managers who already used their wildcard. From Game Week 8 onwards, when you look at Antonio's fixtures, he has Everton away, Spurs at home, Villa away, Liverpool at home. This is his run from Game Week 8 to 11. When I look at Bamford's fixtures, he has Southampton away, Wolves at home, Norwich away, and Leicester at home. Now, those fixtures are significantly better off than Antonio's fixtures from 8 to 11. So, in my opinion, if you are to make that move from 8 to 11, where you prefer owning Bamford anyways, why not do it ahead of Newcastle, West Ham, and Watford right now?
What about this the pinging, Bakar?
I don't think it's much of a concern personally, but let's see. Let's fingers crossed that it's nothing more than that.
It had me worried. It had me worried.
Yeah, but
we haven't really heard a concrete, a news for it. No credible journalist or any news agency has sort of come up and said anything on that matter.
But Zoff, why were you on Bakar's case for this? I'm curious about that.
Because he did it on Saturday night when Bamford still hadn't played on Sunday. I just couldn't get over that.
I did it because I didn't want to lose value on Antonio because I was late on Antonio and I had bought him for 7.6, and if he had fallen, I would have experienced a drop in value. And I had the wild card in my back pocket in case, something went wrong. I could have afforded to do
something
that.
Might have gone wrong.
Yeah, man, the hamstring is picking. Hopefully not. I'm worried about that. I made the same mistake as you. Bakar, I made that move on Monday night because I was on tilt with DCL missing out the game, and I needed to do something. Sometimes you just need to feel better about FPL immediately, so I do play this game emotionally. And then in the morning, as soon as I read that little 606 voice note where Bamford is whispering under his breath, pinging, I was like, shit, man, this is I was just panic call stations, etc., etc., as well. So yeah, I think you do learn a lesson there. I wanted to actually ask you guys, is there a lesson to learn with, we'll get to Everton later, but is there a lesson to learn with DCL and what happened with DCL? And if somebody's playing with a niggling toe injury all the time, you should be more cautious before transferring that player in. In hindsight, it seems like, yeah, I should have paid more attention to that. But then he also had the best 3 fixtures on paper for a striker. So is there a lesson to be learned there?
Yes and no, I guess. I mean, if the manager says he's training and he's available on the Friday, then you can't really look back at that and say hindsight, oh, just because he's carrying an injury. We've seen players go through entire seasons. Rashford played almost the entire season last season carrying an injury. Sometimes he'd aggravated, he'd struggle to play midweek. But once a manager confirms a player is available on Friday, you assume he's going to play on that weekend. So it's just bad.
I agree.
I just think it was poor luck, Pranil, because I don't think it's... you can sort of be too downbeat about this decision because it perfectly made a lot of sense on Friday. In fact, I was going through the Everton videos of training and their photos, and Calvert-Lewin was looking fine in the video. Honestly, there was no suggestion of him sort of missing out on Monday. This is the kind of decision that would have gone against you 1 out of 100 times, and unfortunately, you just landed on the wrong side of the dice.
Right. Should we look at some stats for Antonio replacements?
Sure, we can do that.
So I've got this table here, strikers sorted by expected goal involvement, and no surprise that Antonio, the guy we're thinking of selling, is right on top. So it emphasizes a case that if you don't have any other issues in your team, there's not necessarily a reason to sell Antonio. Ironically, Calvert-Lewin, the guy who's second, is out injured. Lukaku, not really, obviously out in the price bracket. Jesus is only 8.6. I thought he was more than that for some reason. Bamford, yes, numbers are good. 11 shots inside the box, only 3 shots on target, 2 big chances. The choices besides Bamford, you have Wilson, who's injured, Bucker's favorite, Chris Wood over there, but not such great numbers.
Who do you like, Zoff, as a Bamford replacements, looking at numbers? Antonio replacements or DCL replacements?
I mean, I really don't see any choice besides Bamford. I think the only other option would probably be Jimenez or Richarlison. If you want to take up on Richarlison, it's not bad because, you know, he's going to be on penalties now. Nobody's going to wrestle the ball off him this time. And the fixtures are good. Again, we just go back looking at, let's have a look at, sort them by fixtures again. You see Leeds and Wolves have the best fixtures. So that emphasizes again why Jimenez and Bamford probably. I think you were mentioning Iheanacho earlier in our talk today. Why have you suddenly considering Iheanacho?
It's because there was just a little bit of a talk under the radar of Rogers shifting shape, etc. He does need to, but I saw those highlights and a little more sense came later where I think you make the move to Iheanacho after Rogers has played him in a game and after he's had a sustainable set of starts. You don't do it before preempting that. That's just trying to be too smart. So I think the options for people who want to shift Antonio, I'm with you. I don't think you should shift Antonio if your team can handle it. And if you can field 11, I think he's a good option for the next two. We've got Leeds United and Brentford at home. They are good fixtures. And look at Antonio's numbers, they're good. So what I would do if I was to shift to Calvert-Lewin is if Bamford is confirmed fit, and I'm acting a little hypocritical, saying that you wait for Bielsa's press conference on Thursday, but I did not know about the news. I came to know about it this morning. I made the move last evening. I think now that you know that there might be a slight concern, you wait till Thursday morning for Bielsa's presser and move to Bamford. He seems like the obvious pick. Otherwise, I'd go down to Jimenez. I think he's the only other option in the price bracket, or I'd go to Pukki.
Right. I'm just looking at the numbers here also in terms of attack shots inside the box. Wolves are third. XG non-penalty 7.93. Leeds all the way, I think they were around fifth or sixth bottom in terms of shots in the box. XG non-penalty. But what do you think, Bakker? Leeds attacking numbers?
They haven't been great this season. I agree. They haven't hit the heights of last season. And do you want me to go through a whole comparison on Jimenez and Bamford? I have one planned if you want me to run through it right now.
No, sure, go for it.
Yeah, so Jimenez, Wolves have basically accumulated almost twice the XG of Leeds, which would make you think that Jimenez sort of might be the better pick than Bamford when you're looking at them individually. But there's not much actually in terms of individual numbers. One thing you'll notice is that Jimenez is sort of dropping deep. And he's, even though he's getting some shots inside the box, he's creating more chances. You know, he has like 12 chances created this season. So he's taken a bit of a more creative role with Trincao, Adama, and the fullbacks are getting the majority of the chances. And before this week, Jimenez had no big chance involvement. This was the first week in which he accumulated 2 big chance involvements. This was the first week out of the 4 weeks he's played in. And over the season, he's had just the 2, as compared to Bamford, who's had 3. So Bamford is actually, you know, doing better. When I look at their fixtures coming up, now this is very pertinent. Jimenez has Brentford, who are 3rd for XG conceded. Then he has Southampton, 12th for XG conceded. Newcastle, 20th for XG conceded. Then Villa, 9th for XG conceded. When you compare them with Bamford's, Bamford has Newcastle 20th for XG conceded, West Ham 11th for XG conceded, Watford 14th for XG conceded, and Southampton 12th for XG conceded. So none of the teams that Bamford is playing in the next 4 is in the top 10 for XG conceded, which just makes me feel that Bamford might be the one to go with because he has more of a threat and the fixtures are slightly better.
Agree.
Well, there's a little bit of a dilemma here, right? Though, because Wolves have been better in attack compared to Leeds United. And what do you do when something like comes? You go with the team that we know is going to know how to attack better, or you rely on the team playing against the weaker opposition defensively? What do you do in such a dilemma?
You know, when you look at the XG, Pranil, even the Wolves have an XG of 8. It's not as if Jimenez has contributed to that XG, is my counter argument. His XG is more or less like around the 1.5 mark.
I'll just pull up his numbers over here. Yeah, his XG non-penalty is just 0.92 in the last four matches. But to counter that point, you also see his expected goal involvement almost doubles that number, because his assist potential is probably much higher than any other forward, bar Kane, I guess.
Yeah. He just needs that one goal. Even that chance of a set piece where he had that header in a previous season, that goes in if it's Jimenez, because he always gets that sort of a chance under Nuno and he puts it. We're known Jimenez to be that guy who gets one or two chances in the second half of a game, because Nuno's teams don't create anything in the first half, and then he buries them. He was reliable for that. So I think he just needs to break that one goal duck at the moment. But I don't think Jimenez is a bad punt should anything happen to Bamford. If Bamford is fine, I think you go for Bamford.
Yeah, I think we'd all be sorted in the top three. I think we'd all definitely go for Bamford number one, Jimenez probably number two, Richarlison. What about Watkins? I thought Watkins was very lively against Chelsea. I know the fixtures aren't the best, but I don't think Watkins is a too bad a shout far. Let's have a look at Villa's fixtures again. Where are they?
Wolves, Arsenal.
It's not the best, is it? You probably don't want to go there right now. It's not too bad.
I think you play the fixtures with Jimenez in that case.
There's some people who've asked about Richarlison. He was peripheralized last night. He wasn't really involved. And as I quoted, Everton's attacking numbers without DCL are actually not good, and the whole attack actually suffers without them. So I won't look at Richarlison as well personally.
Yeah, and if you're a DCL owner and a Bruno owner, I think it's also a good time to make that shift, given DCL is injured. You get in Ronaldo and then get in a Rafinha or a midfielder for that price. So if you own Bruno and DCL, I think the move is also there for you to make the switch, even if it's for a hit, I reckon.
Right. Cool. Let's move on to the next fixture.
Yes, Watford versus... Yeah, I think we've discussed Jimenez.
Semedo. I want to talk about Semedo here. Semedo, I really don't know how he didn't score. I watched the highlights. I watched it back 3 times. I just couldn't believe the kind of chances he was getting from open play. Even the goal they scored, the Marçal with the header, that was Semedo assisting the assister. So he's constantly involved in that attack. And what's happening, Jimenez is dropping very deep. And we have a separate slide here for Wolves. I'll just show it to you guys. The pass map. You see where Jimenez is playing is behind Trincao and Adama. He's the one providing the passes for those guys. And Semedo is constantly the outlet on that right wing.
Correct. And also, if you notice, what's happening is, first of all, credit to Bruno Lage to have such a set system in place so quick. Jimenez is actually playing the Firmino role, and Trincao and Traore are acting like inside forwards. I wish Trincao didn't have that minutes threat, because I think he's the one. I think he's talented. I think against opposition that sits also, I think he had the better chances and the better creation. Even that first Semedo chance, it was Trincao that made that pass from his left foot as well. And I think he's just a fabulous player. I love watching him as well. Semedo is the one who's making those runs in field. So he's got a lot more touches inside the box. And Marcel is the one who's hogging the bylines, who's hogging the touchlines, and he's sending in more crosses. So Semedo is the more fullback with the higher goal threat, and Marcel is the fullback with the higher assist threat. And I think in that case, I think the 0.4 million price difference is worth it for Semedo. Like you can see, look at the touches that Semedo has inside the box. And you can see that Marcel is actually just hogging the touchline and crossing a lot more. The positioning is a lot more cross-focused. You can see it in the stats in the next slide as well. So, can you pull the next slide? Yeah. So, even when it comes to the numbers, they tell a story. But I'm just trying to pull that up because I can't see your screen.
So
can you read out the numbers?
Yes. So, you have average penalty box touches 3.7 for Semedo versus 1 just for Marcel. Average goal attempts 1.7 versus 1.08. Goal attempts in box 1.0 versus 0.2. Shots on target 0.3 to 0. Big chances total 0.7 to 0.2. minutes per attempt, 54 to 120. Massive differences.
Yep, yep. And they're in the top 5 for XGC as well. So I think if you're in the market for a defender, I think you go Semedo at the moment. I think, Zoff, you're looking at Semedo in this week.
So, and it's interesting, I'll talk about that. I'm a bit confused whether to do it for Tsimikas or for Ayling, because I'm pretty convinced Tsimikas plays this weekend. It depends on the lineups tomorrow. So we'll get to that.
Any word on...
Few numbers.
Go on.
I have a few numbers down here. I was going through some of Bruno Lage's numbers when he was at Benfica in 1920. His left
in
back...
1920?
1920. So his left backs that season, Grimaldo, 26 starts, 6 assists. Nuno Tavares, 11 starts, 1 goal, 4 assists. The left backs have 10 assists and a goal between them in 37 starts. The right back, Andre Almeida, has 24 starts, 4 goals, and 5 assists. 11 goal involvements in 24 starts for the right back. That just tells you how involved he likes his fullbacks to be. And honestly, Marcel and Semedo are going to be incredible value this season. Semedo in particular is going to be on another level, in my opinion. He's going to be an absolute beast.
Zoff, I saw you have this conversation with somebody on Twitter where somebody was like, but Semedo can't finish. What's your answer to them?
I mean, you have to get a player who gets these opportunities, right? It's like Raheem Sterling. We always say that he's not the best finisher, but he just gets so many chances that eventually he will find the goal.
Exactly.
Yeah, just like Timo Werner.
He's not even getting the
chance. Short fired.
Poor guy. No, I know, but he's a Timo Werner fan, bigger fan than I am, so...
I just wanted to throw that in. Nice segue to your team, Chelsea versus Aston Villa. I don't know how. Do you want to touch upon Watford though? Because the next three fixtures are, I think, as good as it can get for any team. Norwich, Newcastle, and Leeds.
I know I talked up Saar the last pod, but he was completely shut down. He didn't have a single shot in the box this whole game. Marcel really did a job on him. And Wolves in general,
Watford had just the 2 shots inside the box all game.
Exactly. There you go. So I think the next 3 fixtures are pretty good. Norwich, Newcastle, Leeds, all 3 teams that have struggled defensively so far.
Now, if FPL gods were supposed to design a set of 3 fixtures where you'd like your attack to play against, I think it would be these 3 teams at the moment. I don't think it gets better at the moment given the defensive form.
Just worth mentioning that
Starr did have that chance that he created for Josh King, which will not be recorded in the stats. It's something where he was behind the defense and King just needed to put 1 foot and he was very close to putting that in. So it's just something that I noticed. So yeah, I don't think you sell your Watford attacker if you own them at the moment. That's for sure.
Because like you mentioned, I just showed you the stats. So in terms of open play, goal attempts conceded, Newcastle 5th bottom, Norwich 3rd bottom, Leeds 2nd bottom. Like you said, couldn't cherry pick better opponents.
Yep. All right. Chelsea versus Aston Villa, Zoff.
The scoreline flattered us massively. It was a Kovacic show. I think with Mount not playing, Kovacic had a lot more responsibility in terms of ball progression. And seeing that Kovacic is almost ready to go up in price, I can't believe people are buying Kovacic. I think it's only the 3rd time in his entire career he's only assisted and scored in the same game. It was his first league goal at Stamford Bridge. So please don't be buying Kovacic. He's a great player to watch, but he's not really an FPL option. In terms of Chelsea, heavy rotation in the squad. Mason Mount didn't play. A lot of the backline was changed up. I think probably because of the international break post, just because the players were a bit disjointed. We didn't really deserve to win 3-0. I thought Villa played very well. Mendy kept us in it. But now we have a clinical finisher in Lukaku. That makes all the difference.
I also think he was saving Mount for the next 2 games, which were big games for you guys, right? I mean, you guys have Spurs and City, and I think he'll want Mount for those games for sure, which is why I think he was saving them as well.
Right. He probably looked at this as a winnable fixture with Martinez, Buendia, etc. all out, right? But Villa looked pretty good. I was very impressed with Bailey when he came on. I thought he had a good impact. He's going to be fun to watch. He had this whole battle going on in the corner. He tried a nutmeg and all that stuff. It was fun to watch.
Yeah, I've earmarked that run for Villa. Game week 7 onwards, Wolves, Arsenal, West Ham, Southampton, Brighton, Crystal Palace. I think Watkins, Ings, maybe one of the midfielders might enter our thinking at that point. I don't mind investments. And I agree with you, they did show promise. And yeah, I think Lukaku showed what he's capable of. I don't think his owners were lucky at all. This is the caliber of the player that you have at the moment, where even if he gets two shots, he's going to convert them. And imagine when Chelsea is playing a team which might concede a lot more chances, then you're in for a good run with that guy.
Correct. Anything else, Parker? Move on to Leeds, Liverpool?
No, move on.
No, Zoff, I want to talk about defenders at the moment, because a lot of defender people are still in the market for Chelsea defender. Anything to add compared to what you said last season? Because Christensen didn't play.
Christensen didn't play, and that's going to happen every now and then. I think out of the entire back three, probably you'd say Aspi is the most nailed along with Rudiger. But Christensen, the appeal is the price. You can get an additional, you can get a Ben White to cover his absences if he misses out. You can get a Marcel to cover his absences, which gives you more depth in the bench as well. The left back situation interesting. Go ahead.
If I was on a wild card this week, I'd get James, honestly.
That was going to be my next point. I think James is definitely one of the, out of the fullback positions, I think James is more nailed now this year because he can cross a lot better to Lukaku. And I think Chilwell, I'm surprised he hadn't got a game yet, but I think he's back in the equation now, as per Tuchel's latest comments. We might see him start in the Champions League. So that spot, I think rotation is going to be annoying because Alonso is probably going to play the easier games with Chilwell playing the Champions League game. So the left wing back spot is dodgy.
I just think something's up with Ben Chilwell. Something has been up with Ben Chilwell since the Euros, because even if you remember, there were so many times where Southgate didn't even include him in the squad. And you had an option of a lot of players being on the squad. So I think there's just been some sort of news which isn't out in the media, etc. And something's been up with him for a while. So because even the comments that Tuchel's been making, where, you know, he's talking about positivity and he's feeling a lot better and all of that. So I think there's just some news and info that we don't have yet with Ben Chilwell. So I don't think you make a move there until he plays a couple of games at least.
Right. Leeds, yeah. Liverpool. Bakar, you want to lead this one?
I didn't own Jota for this fixture, and I had the goal notifications on, and every single time Liverpool scored, I was my heart sort of skipped a beat, and at the end of the day, I caught the highlights, and I was lucky enough to catch the fact that Mane basically missed all the opportunities that Jota created on a plate for him. His owners were very, very unlucky. Jota played really, really well. He created two chances for Mane, two big chances. He really should have had more points. Similarly for Salah, actually. Salah himself had two big chances and scored just the one time. And I think us non-captainers sort of got away with it, because this could have been a game where Salah could have had 14, 15 points, actually. Other than that, Trent's numbers caught my eye yet again. He created five chances, which now takes him to 20 chances created for the season, which is by far and away the best for any player in the league. The second highest is Grealish on 13, which just tells you, Trent, he is a play every week, regardless of the fixture. I mean, I had penciled this down as a bit of a tough fixture for Liverpool, and I didn't necessarily expect them to keep a clean sheet. But this is the thing with Trent. One assist and clean sheet and boom, 12 points.
That's true. Absolutely.
Yeah, I feel bad for Salah captainers, Mane and Jota owners. I think all three of them could have had at least two or three return. Yeah. I feel bad for them, man, because he had the chances.
It's the second time Mane has gone on tilt this season. He did this against Burnley as well, just because he misses one or two, three chances. After that, he just becomes selfish and refuses to pass the ball.
Yeah, but how many of those chances where he didn't pass the ball weren't clear opportunities? I mean, if Salah was in that position, he'd take a shot from the position Mane was taking shots from as well. So I don't blame him too much. I think that's just it's his role. He's supposed to be a selfish attacker, which is what works for Liverpool. He just didn't have his shooting boots on the day, which happens to any player. It's happened to Mane for the last year almost, but it's something you take into consideration. I don't think they were ridiculous, the shots that he took from the positions that he was in. I think
Few times he could have played in a defender. He could have created a better, clearer chance for his teammates. A few times, I felt.
Yeah. Just want to add one thing that has changed a fair bit from last season is Salah's creative role. Only Grealish and Trent have created more chances than Mo Salah amongst anybody in FPL this season. So I think Salah is getting more routes to points. So just adds confidence to captaining Mo Salah if you needed that anyway. And Mane is on top of the league right now for non-penalty XG. So just something worth pointing out. Because if Trent is in form, Mane is always a good option. That's something I've noticed from previous experiences. What's up with Leeds?
Yeah, the Leeds have not looked, they're sort of missing their mojo, but the season starts now. There was a good interview with the chairman after. First of all, we should say we all hope that Harvey Elliott gets well soon. It was a really nasty injury.
Yeah, it was a nice touch from him where he was in the hospital with somebody else also. He was a kid and he was in his kit then still. And he just gave it to him and that kid tweeted and it was just nice. He seems like a very mature guy for his age as well. I think Liverpool, he's going to be a big player for them. Love the guy.
In terms of Leeds, I guess hold Rafinha, get in Bamford if you need a forward, but avoid the defense right now. And if you have ailing, go ahead.
So, this has been a very pertinent question this week, very popular. If you own Rafinha, would a double up on Bamford put you off?
No, because basket wasting. Yeah. We talk about exactly. Basket wasting from agree. Day one, so absolutely not.
Exactly, completely agree. I like looking at each pick in isolation as well, and I firmly believe that Leeds will turn it around. So I want to be early to the party rather than late.
Yeah, and also with people who are put off by Rafinha having only 1-4 at the moment, I think the points will come. I thought he looked pretty good in real life in the game as well. I thought Rafinha and Bamford both were decent in attack, at least. So I wouldn't be against buying either, as long as Bamford is fine. Just worth pointing out, because there's a lot of panic in our chat as well, where people are talking about Bamford injury rumors. All three of us at the moment think it's nothing. It was just, if you're playing Bielsa ball, you're going to get tired. And if your hamstrings don't ping, it's actually a problem. So it's nothing, a little bit of a rest and some massaging can sort. So just wait for Thursday for Bielsa's presser. It's nothing but speculation. I wouldn't panic at the moment.
Absolutely. Move on. Last fixture.
Yes, last fixture.
Nothing too much to add on Burnley, Everton. I think Gray and Townsend are worth looking at as in midfield, I think, as cheap picks. Defense, Bakar, yeah. As a Dean owner, tell me, what do you think about the defensive prospects?
Their numbers have been good this season, but this game was one where they conceded three big chances, which is actually more than what they've conceded in all season. So they didn't deserve to keep a clean sheet. Burnley were the far better side in the first half, actually, and thoroughly deserved to lead when they did. But I mean, he's a keep for me. I mean, if he with the fixtures, Villa away, Norwich at home, I think he's a keep for me. He's still on set pieces, which is great. Townsend isn't taking set pieces. So whenever Everton are to keep a clean sheet, Dean will get a probably a nice sizable chunk of the bonus, which is good for the next couple of game weeks.
Agree.
Just want to mention, they've been top 5 in the league for XG this season, which is, I thought, was a pretty decent stat. That's all I want to add.
Great. Should we move on now to the preview for the next week?
Yes. We'll just do the captaincies because kickoff is in 5 minutes and I don't miss it.
Yeah.
Let's just do captaincy. I think any Salah standout choice, the Liverpool fixture looks great.
Yep. I'm on Mo Salah at the moment. The only thing worth pointing out is that Palace's defensive stats, like we spoke about previously as well, they're pretty good. They're in the best 5 in the league for their defensive stats, most of the underlying numbers. And West Ham are mid-table for their defensive stats. So if somebody wants to go for Ronaldo, good luck with that. I'm not doing it, but just wanted to point out these stats.
Exactly. And Liverpool are the best for XG this season, which is also very pertinent.
Yep. Do you think anything happens on the right-hand side? Because Harvey Elliott enabled a lot on the right-hand side for both Salah and Trent, where he was a good link-up player. But Hendo's been doing it for all seasons except the previous one, and both Salah and Trent have been good assets, except for not as good assets last season when Hendo wasn't there. So I think Hendo makes up for Elliott. He'll just play the role differently.
Another point which we forgot to make is the home and away factor. Which I think is very pertinent for captaincy. I said last week that 62% of the goals this season have been scored at home, and 38 away. Even in this game week, 58% were scored at home and 42% away. So just that haul potential, you know, that home game gives me the more security for it being a haul for someone like Mo Salah.
Yep. Just a question in the pod. A few people are asking because I think they're on wildcard. They're asking for best picks if you were on wildcard. So I just want to... I actually played around with a wildcard draft while I was in Panic Station. So I think keeper, like we mentioned earlier, you go for either Sanchez, Saar, or even Pickford. I think those are the options if you go in that bracket. If you're more of a risk taker, you go for Ramsdale. In defense, boys, if you disagree, just let me know because I think at least we can assist our listeners here. In defense, I think I'd look at one of Reece or Shaw in addition to Trent. Trent is a no-brainer for all three of us. And then you go for Semedo, who all three of us like as well. In midfield, I think we like Salah, Jota and Rafinha. I think you build around that. And up front, you have Ronaldo or Lukaku, one of them. It's okay to not have either or. I think you start with Ronaldo and you move to Lukaku. If you want to start with Lukaku, it's fine as well. And you go with Bamford if he's fine.
I'd actually go with four at the back. I'd have all four of Trent, Semedo, Shaw and James. That's what I do.
Shaw is the one I'd probably skip out on.
Yeah, I just pointed out why I like Shaw earlier on, and that's why.
I like him short term, but then again,
with and a possible fourth midfielder off of Gallagher.
Correct. Fair enough. Correct. Cool. All three of us on Salah captain?
Yes, yep. As of now.
All right. Cool.
Right. Move on to our teams?
Yes.
Sure.
I think, Pranil, this is your team up first. I see Billy Gilmore in there.
Yes, just going to read out the team for the benefit of the listeners. My team is on its last legs. I think my team is feeling its hamstrings as well at the moment. As my keeper, I have Sanchez. In defense, I have Trent, Shaw and Luke Ayling. I'm dreading playing a Leeds United defender. I'm hoping to fluke a clean sheet. I have Salah as captain, Greenwood, Rafinha, Benrahma and Gilmore in my midfield. Gilmore is playing Watford at home, so I'm just taking that shot. And up front, I have Ronaldo and Bamford. And I don't have a playing bench. I have Webster and Antonio on my bench. And I've used my free transfer, panic-stricken last night, to do DCL to Bamford. So that's my team. At the moment, if somebody's injured in the Champions League or if some sort of news comes out for Bamford, I might look at a -4 and do Webster to Semedo and hold on to the wild card because traveling on Friday. And I think I really want to think through my wild card and I'll sacrifice a few points at the moment. But if my mind changes in the next 2 days, I don't know.
Agree. No wild card required.
No.
Bakar?
I have Sanchez in goal, Shaw, Trent, Dean, Rafinha, Greenwood, Salah, captain, Ferran Torres, Benrahma, Bamford, and Ronaldo. My captain will be Mo Salah. On the bench, I have Tsimikas, Omabedele, and Scarlett. In case Bamford is injured, I think Tsimikas is going to play. So Tsimikas is going to come on in that case. In fact, I'm actually half tempted to play Tsimikas over Benrahma because I really like the fixture for Liverpool in terms of a clean sheet. And, you know, in the worst case scenario, I even have Omabedele as a decent fixture against Watford. So I don't think I need to make a transfer at all.
You've already made a transfer.
Yeah, I mean, to make another transfer for hit is what I meant.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'd agree with that. Cool. Right. So just save the time. This is pretty much the same teams as Buckers. I haven't made the transfer yet. For Antonio to Bamford. So this is what I was telling you guys. I'm a bit confused now. I want to give Tsimikas a run out. But at the same time, he's the weakest link in my squad. And it makes sense I sell him for Semedo. But then I would end up having to probably play White. So I'm not even sure. But ideally, I'd rather play Semedo and Tsimikas and sell Ayling. But then that's going to leave me a hole in my squad. Like, you know, if Firmino has a setback, I want to get rid of that dud third Liverpool slot. You never know what's going to happen in the coming few weeks. So it's a decision I have to make there. It all depends, I guess, on the minutes Robertson gets in the Champions League tomorrow.
Correct. Correct.
That's going to make my decision. Cool. Yep. Let's wrap up.
All right, guys. We're apologizing. We're not going to do a Q&A today because we're all football fans and we want to watch Manchester United play the Champions League. Apologies for that. And we'll see you next Tuesday. Thank you for being with us and good luck this game week, guys.
Good luck. Thank you.
Good luck, everyone. Bye. Hope you smash it.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.